I've heard lots of discussion about, let's get through this next election. We'll do it after the election. You know, time we stop talking about, you know, the upcoming election or the re-election and start making decisions about what's best for Alaska right now.
Governor Walker reacts to the budget from lawmakers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 1st. Good evening. I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, is an oil tax reform bill next?
I am very hopeful, actually optimistic, that we are going to arrive at a good compromise on House Bill 247.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Governor Bill Walker says the legislature's work is a long way from being over. While lawmakers stopped pink slips from being sent to state workers by passing a budget, Walker says the legislature must act now to prevent a repeat in the future.
Do we have to go broke before we fix Alaska? I guess that's my question to the legislature. Do we actually have to do that?
The budget relies on a $3.2 billion draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve to pay for spending. Walker is urging the legislature to pass his fiscal plan. A central component of that plan is reductions to oil and gas tax credits. In addition, it would restructure permanent fund earnings to pay for the budget and reduce dividend payments. Walker also introduced a personal income tax and proposed raising other taxes. In a press conference today, a visibly frustrated Walker replied to a question about whether he'd veto portions of the budget by saying there would be consequences for the budget if the legislature doesn't do more. Some lawmakers are calling for Walker to be more involved in advocating for his bills. House Majority Leader Cherise Millett says Walker should do more.
He has to talk to our constituents. I mean, this is something that he needs to have a conversation with Alaska about what this means for our economy, how each one individually affects the economy, what the overall plan will be. And I think that's something very important.
Walker rejected the idea that he and his administration haven't been involved enough in advocating for his plan.
Those that say we haven't done enough, I'm pushing back on that. I'm very offended by that. That's unjustified, and that's an insult, not to me. It's an insult to my staff that have our directors, our cabinet members that have given up, you know, a lot of their personal time to travel this great state to do that.
And while legislative leaders say they were happy to have bipartisan support to fund the budget, Walker says the legislature must have new revenue. Without it, the state will be in the same position next year, but it won't have the same savings to use to pay for the budget.
That's why we were elected, to come and make these decisions. I've heard lots of discussion about, let's get through this next election. We'll do it after the election. You know, time we stop talking about, you know, the upcoming election or the re-election and start making decisions about what's best for Alaska right now.
Republican majority leaders have said that some bills will come up for votes, although committee chairs may block others. But Walker says it's not enough to vote on bills. The governor says the state must pass them to prevent uncertainty that will slow the state's economy and downgrade the state's credit ratings. One of those bills relates to oil and gas tax credits. For months, Democrats in the legislature have been clear they would not vote for a budget unless there are major cuts to state subsidies for oil companies. Then, last night, Democrats did just that, voted for a budget without those cuts. But the budget does not include about $775 million owed to the companies this year. Democrats say if companies want those credits, there has to be oil tax reform. APRN's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
Here's my conversation with Democratic Minority Leader Chris Tuck last week. I'd asked about potential layoff notices for state workers.
You mentioned pink slips next week. That's next Tuesday. Do you really think it's possible to get a budget passed in time to prevent those from going out?
It all depends on what we do on the oil tax credits again.
It all depends what we do on oil tax credits. Tuck said Democrats wouldn't supply the votes to dip into the state's piggy bank, their main leverage in the legislature, unless there was a bill cutting future tax credits. But fast forward 1 week, and here is Tuck on Wednesday morning.
We were able to negotiate a budget deal. I want to thank you and all Alaskans for the patience you have shown and watching us get through this budget deal.
A budget deal that doesn't include the oil tax reform Democrats were holding out for. So what changed? Democrats say they got a good deal. A budget that reverses cuts to the University of Alaska, public schools, the marine highway system, and more. And that waiting any longer put the state at risk of a government shutdown. And they say there's still time for an oil tax deal. Because what the budget doesn't include is money for oil tax credits. Lawmakers are touting a $4.4 billion operating budget this year, compared with about $5.2 billion last year. That sounds like a big cut, until you realize that this year's total doesn't include cash payments already owed to oil companies. There's another $400 million for those credits tucked into a separate section of the budget, but it can only be released if some version of the oil tax reform bill passes. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra hammered that point home during a press conference Wednesday morning.
And we used as much leverage as we could to say, you don't even get half of your the money that we owe under this terrible system unless you pass that oil tax credit bill.
Meanwhile, the bill itself, called House Bill 247, is sitting in a conference committee which must iron out the differences between the House and Senate. Kathy Giesel of Anchorage represents Senate Republicans in those negotiations.
I am very hopeful, actually optimistic, that we are going to arrive at a good compromise on House Bill 247. I won't say that I have that equal confidence that it will pass both bodies.
She means she isn't sure it can pass the House, where several Republicans joined Democrats to pass a more sweeping reform bill. Giesel says there's broad agreement on several points. Everyone, for instance, agrees that subsidies for companies in Cook Inlet are too high, and that generous tax perks for new oil should eventually expire. She hopes those changes are enough. But Homer Representative Paul Seaton, one of the Republicans who bucked the leadership in the House, says the bill must address credits on the North Slope, too.
We need to limit that liability instead of just waiting for it to hit us in the head like a hammer.
One way or another, lawmakers say they hope to see some new version of the oil tax reform bill soon. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski lost the Republican primary last time she ran. But today, former Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan filed to run against her right before the deadline to get into the race. Murkowski has picked up two new Democratic challengers as well, UAA Professor Edgar Blatchford and former legislator Ray Metcalf. Both men have Republican roots. Blatchford served as a Commerce Commissioner for Republican Governor Frank Murkowski and in the cabinet of Governor Wally Hickel. He, like many candidates this year, says he wants to break partisan gridlock, and Blatchford adds, stop government bashing.
We beat up on the United States government. For Pete's sake, it's our government. It's our people that we send to Washington, D.C. We got to stop this and come to the table and start talking to each other.
Anyone challenging Murkowski now starts at a huge disadvantage. She's raised about $4 million. Blatchford says it's not all about money.
I think if an Alaskan gives a dollar, that is much more valuable than $1,000 or $1 million that's been donated from people who live elsewhere.
Blatchford has been mayor of Seward, board chairman of Chugiak Alaska Native Corporation, and a publisher of newspapers serving rural Alaska. He now owns two small newspapers and teaches journalism and Native studies. Ray Metcalf was twice elected to the state house in the late 70s and early 80s. He was a Republican then. He later founded his own party, the Republican Moderate Party of Alaska. He's an Anchorage real estate broker. 2 hours before the filing deadline, Metcalf said he was running for U.S. Senate, not necessarily against Murkowski, because he said she hasn't won a spot on the general election ballot yet.
So just on the chance that she might lose, I don't think it's out of the question that I might have an opportunity to be successful.
Even if Murkowski wins her primary against Sullivan, Metcalf says he still stands a chance because of all the excited Bernie Sanders supporters.
We're hoping to ride Bernie's coattails a little bit. I was a delegate for Bernie at the state convention.
Anchorage immigration attorney Margaret Stock is also running for U.S. Senate as an independent. Other Republicans challenging Murkowski are Thomas Lamb and Bob Lochner. Meanwhile, Vince Beltrami has filed to run for state Senate, challenging Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Geisel. Beltrami is president of the Alaska AFL-CIO and a longtime Democrat, but he's running as a nonpartisan. Democrat Tom Begich has filed to run for state Senate, too, for the downtown Anchorage seat now held by Senator Johnny Ellis. After 30 years in the legislature, Ellis announced today that he will not seek re-election. Ed Wesley, newly named as the Democratic National Committeeman, is also running. Just before the deadline, no Republican had filed for that seat. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Medfra fire northwest of McGrath continues to grow.
There's three fires, actually. I mean, there's two fires that are substantial, and then there was another hot spot that was picked up. And those have all merged into one fire now.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The legislature took three actions this week that will help foster care children, passing two bills aimed at finding kids adoptive homes and adding money to the budget to help keep struggling families together. House Bills 27 and 200 both passed the Senate on Tuesday. They work in tandem to get kids out of the foster care system more quickly and into permanent homes. They also focus on keeping children with family members by reducing barriers for extended family to apply for placement preferences. Representative Les Guerra, who sponsored HB 27, says the bills will keep kids from bouncing from foster home to foster home.
Our bill sort of helps helps find adoptive families for youth so they don't bounce on the foster care system when they weren't going to be reunified with their parents anyway. And the governor's bill speeds up the adoption process.
HB 200 streamlines legal proceedings, allowing one judge to look at multiple aspects of a family's case. The legislature also added $2.3 million to the budget for family reunification and retention. Guerra says it will go toward programs that aim to keep families together so they don't have to enter the foster system in the first place.
If we can keep families together, it's frankly more humane and it's cheaper than paying for a foster care system for a child that could have stayed with a family that was able to get their act together.
Alaska has the nation's second highest number per capita of foster youth awaiting permanent homes. Both bills are headed to the governor's desk for signatures. Dozens of firefighters are battling a wildfire northeast of McGrath that has grown rapidly over the past few days. Tim Mowry is a public information officer for the Division of Forestry.
There's three fires, actually. I mean, there's two fires that are substantial, and then there was another hot spot that was picked up. And those have all merged into one fire now, the Medfra fire, which we're estimating currently is about 8,130 acres. So it's grown considerably as a result of those fires merging together.
Mowry says the Division of Forestry has four crews on the 8,000-acre fire, including smoke jumpers and nearly 80 personnel. The Medfra fire was first reported Sunday morning. Fire managers say the wind shifted Tuesday, turning the spread of the blaze back toward McGrath. Mowry says the crews are primarily trying to protect native allotments, including a cabin just south of the fire. State prosecutors are pushing for a criminal trial in the wake of last year's devastating Sockeye wildfire near Willow. But as the anniversary of the fire approaches on June 14th, attorneys for the two defendants have asked for more time to prepare their case. As Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports, there's still a chance for an out-of-court settlement.
On a hot Friday afternoon in Palmer, a half dozen or so defendants await the judge's arrival in State District Court. But one case in Judge David Zwink's courtroom stands out.
So I was thinking my request was going to be a late summer trial.
Assistant District Attorney Eric Senta tells the judge it will take about 2 weeks for the state to present its criminal case against Greg Immig and Amy DeWitt, the two defendants charged with negligence in starting the Sockeye wildfire. But the case may not go to trial. Kevin Fitzgerald, attorney for Immig, has asked the court for another pretrial hearing on June 10th. Fitzgerald told the judge the state has made an offer, and it could be September before the defense is ready to respond. Palmer District Attorney Roman Kalachek, who's also working on the state's case, says he's reluctant to discuss negotiations, but it's possible the case could be settled out of court.
I think our main concern is just that we want to, you know, if we resolve it, on the chance that we resolve the case, it just has to be a resolution that, you know, reflects the magnitude of this incident.
Kalachek says the defendant's attorneys know what the state will accept.
They probably know that we're looking, you know, at two facets of this case. A, that we would require, you know, an acknowledgement that this was a criminally negligent burning, a crime. And also that, you know, they would have to also recognize the acceptance of responsibility. We have to recognize that the conduct endangered other people in the community.
Attorney Fitzgerald did not return calls in time for this story. The case is unusual because the criminal counts against the defendants are all misdemeanors, but the extent of the damages is enormous. The fire swept more than 7,000 acres and destroyed 55 homes. No human deaths or injuries resulted, but pets and sled dogs perished. Borough officials tally $2.6 million in losses due to the destroyed homes, with an additional $900,000 in losses linked to totally or partially burned property. Fighting the fire cost the state $8 million. D.A. Kalachek says because the misdemeanor charges do not carry jail time, there is no bargaining chip on the table for reduced charges or sentencing. Restitution is the sticking point.
You know, one of the impediments to the full agreement is the restitution component. You know, there's a lot of money at stake here. I don't think the prosecutors have any good information as to how much money anybody really has. So, you know, it's at this point, I don't see any agreement as to a monetary figure.
Kalachek says there is no guarantee either that the case will be settled or go to trial. Anything can happen before a trial, he says, adding that criminal charges need to be determined before civil proceedings can begin. Civil cases could include lawsuits filed by the owners of the destroyed homes. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Anchorage police are investigating the death of a pedestrian struck on the Seward Highway just south of Potter Marsh. Just before 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, police took a call from a driver of a semi-truck. The driver reported possibly striking a pedestrian near the highway truck scales. Police found a critically injured woman along the roadway. 62-year-old Gwen Truox was transported to a hospital where she later died. No citations have been issued and police are continuing to investigate the collision.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
The state plans to open its Tanana Valley Fisheries Center in Fairbanks next week. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the visitor center will realize a long-envisioned public interface at the new hatchery.
The Tanana Valley Fisheries Center is the final piece at the Ruth Burnett Sportfish Hatchery. The $46 million state hatchery ran well over budget and behind schedule due to water treatment issues. It finally began producing fish in 2012, and 4 years later, the visitor center is nearly ready. Hatchery manager Gary George says it'll give the public a window on the operation.
It has a 10,000-gallon aquarium in the center of the space. And then it has viewing windows where you can look out on the culture floor.
The sprawling high-tech hatchery operation behind the glass is a stark contrast to the state's first sport fish rearing facility, a log structure at Birch Lake. George says the visitor center includes a scale model of the vintage hatchery.
Inside we'll have replica production tank, sort of hopefully very similar to what they used at Birch Hatchery in the mid-50s all the way up until early 1960s.
Public outreach and education are part of the Ruth Burnett Sport Fish Hatchery's mission, and a visitor center is required under its borough land lease. The Tanana Valley Fishery Center briefly opened in 2014, but offered little to visitors.
We had a large empty room.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game Sport Fish Communications and Outreach Coordinator Terry Thompson has worked to develop the center, a project he says has lagged for lack of state funding. Thompson credits a $17,000 donation from the Fairbanks North Star Borough with enabling outfitting of the facility.
We constructed the old Birch Lake hatchery. We have enhanced our video selection. We will be installing some panels that would house interpretive text.
Thompson says the state recently funded a position to staff the center.
Somebody that can interact with the public, welcome them, answer questions, provide limited tours through the public spaces.
The Tanana Valley Fishery Center is scheduled to open June 7th and operate Tuesday through Saturday through the summer season. Thompson adds that the center will also provide sport fishing information and loaner gear. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A Haines teenager was likely the first transgender student to compete at a statewide high school athletic competition. Natapon Monyat was born male, but has identified as female since she was about 5 years old. Her participation in last weekend's Anchorage track meet drew a lot of attention, both positive and negative. KHNS's Emily Files talked to the 18-year-old Haines High graduate, who goes by the nickname Ice.
Here's Ice.
You know, if some people say bad to you, and if you doing bad to them, so it not gonna end. Like easy, you know. So if they get bad to say bad something to you, so just smiling at them and just let it go.
There's a lot Ice has to let go. She's been reading comments from news stories about the track competition. Some are supportive and positive, but Ice says others are hateful. But she says the hateful comments make her stronger.
Some hateful people make me stronger and stronger. So, yeah, I want to say thank you for everybody.
It isn't just online commenters who have a problem with Ice competing against other girls. On Friday, the conservative Christian group Alaska Family Action held a press conference. Here's some audio from that, recorded by KTVA. Stephanie Lee Goldman-Williams is speaking.
It is not fair and it is not right for our female athletes. And we have a responsibility to protect our girls that have worked really hard, that are working toward college scholarships.
The group said male-to-female transgender students have an advantage over biologically female athletes. Ice disagrees. She says she takes medication that suppresses male hormones and increases female hormones. Alaska Family Action on Friday was protesting the Alaska School Activities Association's recently adopted policy on transgender athletes. The policy lets local schools decide whether transgender students can compete according to the gender they identify with. Billy Strickland is the Athletic Association's director.
ASAA feels like that the schools are in the best position of dealing with their individual students and know which students consistently identify with a different gender and therefore can apply that better than we can.
Rich Carlson is the Haines School District Interim Superintendent.
Yeah, we're not going to discriminate based on gender identity.
Ice moved to Haines in 2014, but she didn't start participating in sports until this year, her senior year. That kicked the district into action. The school board added gender identity to its non-discrimination policy, and it updated administrative guidelines. Now, the district's stance is that transgender students can compete in sports according to the gender they consistently identify with.
Yeah, and I feel really pretty good. I feel really good, Emily, about how we handled this.
Carlson was expecting some pushback to ICE competing at the state track meet. But when he heard about the press conference protesting the transgender policy, Carlson got on a plane to Anchorage.
I wanted to be there, frankly, to protect ICE.
ICE says in all her races, her coaches tell her to ignore everything and focus on running.
You should focus in the track, what you're going to do right now. So I should focus in running. I should ignore how I'm hurt, how I'm pain. So I should focus just the running.
Now she's trying to ignore the negative reactions to her involvement in the track meet and focus on the support she's gotten. And she wants to share that message with people in similar situations.
Yeah, just to be yourself is your life. Nobody can control it. We have freedom. So everybody can talk everything bad to you, but just ignore that. Sometimes it's so hard to do that, you know, but it's going to be cool and really good when in the future of your life.
ICE ended up placing in both the events she competed in. She won third place in the small school's women's 200-meter sprint and fifth place in the 100-meter race. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rachel Waldholt and Alan Lockyer in Anchorage, Hannah Colton in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Emily Files in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Ann Hillman. Have a fantastic evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. Mount Edgecombe High School provides a curriculum rich in culture and diversity, offering over 80 courses, from art to advanced engineering, and with activities from native dance to kayaking. Class sizes are no larger than 30. Explore your talents and develop your dreams. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.